Hi guys, welcome to April's True Crime Story.
Howdy.
I'm Carrie.
How you doing?
I'm good. I'm Laura. How are you, Laura?
Yeah, I'm doing good.
Yeah?
Doing good.
Mm-hmm. Well, this weekend is Easter weekend. You've got family coming in town, yes?
Yes, I do. I have some family coming in from Ohio.
Oh, that's cool.
So we're having a big family to-do.
Oh, those are nice. Yeah, those are nice.
Yeah, it'll be fun.
Yeah, sounds like it'll be a great time. We don't have anything going on, really. I need to go and get stuff for dinner. And Koi long past Easter basket age, so we'll just probably, you know, have a normal Sunday, but with dinner at the table together that we do only right. on holidays, apparently. Which drives my mother nuts, but what are you going to do?
Yeah, I just went and got all the Easter fun stuff, so that's all there. Which is just annoying because now I have to, like, not get into it all week. This is just a true test for me to not eat all the shit that is in there.
Yeah.
Because like, I know it's there, right?
Yeah, like the Halloween candy.
They're delicious.
They're so good. Yeah. My mom and I went grocery shopping the other day, and right when you walk in is all their Easter stuff, and I was like, oh mom, remember when Koi thought all this was cool and we could buy it? And she was like, yeah, not anymore. Now he's like, meh, doesn't even want to carve pumpkins on Halloween. You know, he's 21, like, he didn't give a crap about any of that. But
the funny thing is, like, he'll revert though, probably actually fairly soon. I remember that I did, like, I got too cool for stuff probably for a very short period of time, and then I was like, you know what,
I miss it.
Fun, yeah, to participate. Yeah, like, I love to dress up for Halloween, I love carving pumpkins, I like to do all the Christmas stuff, like all the holidays I decorate something.
Like, you really do.
Like, I decorate my mantle.
Yes, every holiday
something different.
That's really cool.
I have all the Easter stuff now. It looks really, well, I think it's cute, but I, you know, Zane, he doesn't, I don't know that he even appreciates it, but it's fun.
I mean, Eddie,
I think he does though.
Eddie does.
He likes it when I do it. Yeah, Eddie does, because he gets a knock. It gives him so many new opportunities and things to break. Yeah, next month is Zane's birthday, so I'm thinking I'm gonna do the mantle, like a happy birthday motif for the whole month.
That's really cool. That's really cool. Yeah, I've been, I need to do something.
Life. Welcome to being, you know, in your 40s.
Right. This is 40. This is the decade of 40. How can I decorate my mantle this month? This is shit they didn't tell you about when you were younger. Right. But you got to make adulting fun.
Right? You're not just going to be tired and lame. You're also going to come up with ridiculous things to occupy your time.
Well, you know what? I'll tell you
what. Go to the bars.
Yes. And I will tell you something. When I bought the little garden flags for out front, I got them on Amazon, and it was like 12 months of garden flags and so cute. And I'm like, oh, look at this Easter one. And so next month is Mother's Day. And so I'm really look forward to changing my garden flag. I like, it's just stupid. It's just stupid. Anyway, you want to hear a terrible crime? Yeah.
I do.
You want to hear a terrible crime?
Fucking awful.
All right. Let's get into something fucking awful.
Positivity. There's too much positivity right now.
Right.
Let's fuck all that up.
That's ridiculous. So here's a lovely Easter story. Jesus. Kidding. It doesn't have anything to do with Easter. I don't think. Oh, it did happen this month, though. Anyway, this is my month for True Crime Story, and I'm doing something a little different. I am going to tell you guys all about Robert Hernandez. Have you ever heard of him?
Mm-mm.
You're like, it's a very common name in Arizona, so I've probably met a Robert Hernandez.
I think I know, like, several Robert Hernandez. Now I'm going to look at them all a little bit more sus.
Oh, yeah, seriously. So I am going to actually send you a photo. We're going to put this photo up for the Patreons like I always do. But right now I'm going to send you his photo. He looks like just a real happy, swell guy. Here we go. This is his booking photo, I believe.
All right.
Okay, so we're going to get into the story of Robert Hernandez. And I got my information from mycrimelibrary.com and caselaw.findlaw.com, plus spoke to somebody directly, indirectly involved in the case. So, in April, this actually does take place in Phoenix. In April 2008, Maria Diaz Payan traveled to Phoenix to visit her friend Jenny Sanchez Rivera, who lived with her husband Omar Guzman Diaz. Now, after Maria's arrival, she, Jenny, Jenny's son, and Jenny's friend Sonia Gonzalez took a short trip to New Mexico in a car that was rented by Sonia's mother, Martha Gonzalez. Sonia Gonzalez was the mother of Robert Hernandez's three children. And I guess while they were in New Mexico, Sonia missed a birthday party for one of her and Hernandez's children. And that pissed Robert off. So the day after returning from New Mexico, Jenny and Maria met Omar and his younger brother, Pablo, and they drove to Jenny's house in Peoria. And then when they got there, Omar and Pablo entered the house first while Jenny and Maria stayed in the car. Apparently, a little while later, Robert Hernandez came outside of the house and walked toward the car. Although Maria didn't know who Hernandez was, Jenny referred to him as Bobby. So Bobby took a gun from his pants and he forced Maria and Jenny into the house, telling them not to scream or to make any noise. Once they were inside, Maria could hear Omar and Pablo crying and shouting from inside Jenny's bedroom. While Hernandez forced Maria and Jenny down a corridor to another bedroom, Maria saw another man wearing a ski mask and holding a pistol in Jenny's bedroom. She could hear Omar and Pablo pleading for the men not to hurt them or their family. Maria heard Omar ask Hernandez, "What harm have we done to you, Bobby?" So Hernandez bound Jenny and Maria's hands behind their backs with video game controller cable cords.
Mm-hmm. Right.
So while they were on the bed, while she was on the bedroom floor, Maria didn't look at her captors' faces, hoping that they would not harm her if she didn't see anything. You know, if she didn't have anything to witness, maybe they would let her go. Right. So she heard Hernandez and Jenny talking about Sonia, the mother of his children. And then she heard Hernandez slap Jenny. So after Hernandez returned to Omar and Pablo's room, Maria heard several gunshots, and Omar and Pablo's cries ended. Shortly thereafter, Hernandez and the masked man walked to the bedroom where Maria and Jenny were laying. Maria heard gunshots and right away noticed that they had already shot Jenny. Then one of the two of them shot Maria. So, sometime later, Maria realized she was still alive but bleeding from the head. She ran to a neighbor's house to get help and was later taken to a hospital where she underwent surgery to remove a bullet from her brain. At the hospital, a detective Lopez showed Maria a photo lineup of six men, and Maria identified a photo of Robert Hernandez as Bobby. Mm-hmm. So, Peoria police found the bodies of Jenny, Omar, and Pablo at the house. Omar's body, so Omar was Jenny's husband, his body had six stab wounds. And according to the medical examiner, these wounds were likely inflicted while Omar was still alive. Police also found one copper. Oh, Jesus, here we go. Watch out for the Fuki figures.
English words.
Yes. Watch out for the English words. Police also found one copper jacketed bullet and two lead jacketed bullets in the room, suggesting two different weapons were used to kill Omar and Pablo. Police later determined that Jenny and Martha Gonzalez, who was Sonia's mom, co-leased the house where the murders occurred. Martha was initially cooperative with the detectives and identified the Bobby described by Maria as Robert Hernandez. She told Detective Lopez that Hernandez had a gun, knew where Jenny and Omar lived, and was upset because Sonia went to New Mexico with Jenny and had missed their son's birthday party. I mean, I can see, I would be mad too, but I wouldn't be this mad. Like, this is a little tiny issue, extreme.
That's, well, obviously it's psychotic behavior, like.
1,000%. Yeah. Mm-hmm. So she had also told Detective Lopez that Hernandez had called her at approximately 5:30 p.m. on the day of the murders to say, quote, Omar and Jenny would not be bothering Sonia anymore. So a jury found Hernandez guilty of 3 counts of first-degree murder, premeditated and felony murder, 1 count of attempted murder, 1 count of first-degree burglary, and 4 counts of kidnapping. And one of the jurors in this trial was me.
Oh, shit. Okay.
So I'm the person indirectly connected that I consulted on this story. So I didn't want to tell this story because I didn't want to relive it, but I also wanted to tell this story because I think a lot of true crime stories, you don't get the perspective of somebody on the jury. So unless it's a big, huge case like O.J. Simpson and the jurors are writing books and, you know, shit like that.
Mm-hmm. Right.
So I'm going to talk about the trial. So just about everybody has been called for jury duty at some point, and maybe your group gets dismissed before you even go down to the court. Maybe you go down and find then that your group is dismissed, or maybe you get chosen. This was the third jury summons that I had ever received in my life. The first time, I had just moved to Pittsburgh and was excused. Like, I had just moved there. Like, my mail was being forwarded, and I got the summons forwarded to me. The second time, I had called in that morning, like they said you have to do, and my group had been dismissed. The third time, however, so in the beginning, and this was a death penalty murder trial in Phoenix. So in the beginning, it's all random. Group numbers, potential juror numbers, everything is selected at random. When my juror number was called, I followed a huge group of people that was led by a bailiff to a courtroom on the third floor of the Arizona Superior Court building in downtown Phoenix. We all stood in a line outside the door, waiting to be called in. I was excited because I'm one of the few people who think jury duty is cool. I really do. And so after a bit, another uniformed bailiff came down the line handing us a brochure. And when I looked at it, it read, Arizona lengthy trial process. I was like, what? So as I read it more, it discussed what the requirements were of jurors on cases expected to last 6 weeks or more. 6 weeks or more. And yeah. I'm like, what the hell case is this? So this still didn't dissuade me. I was still like, hell yeah. Because at that time, I was working as a bill collector for GM Financial, and I fucking hated that job. So if I could take 6 weeks off, that would be really great. So as we waited to be let in, people were starting to bitch and complain. Like, I am not doing this. I can't spend 6 weeks here and on and on and on. So, yeah, I was thrilled, and I had really hoped that I would be picked. What an idiot. Seriously, like, oh my God.
I've gotten called into the court once, and it was on a manslaughter trial. And we got dismissed. I was working and going to school, so it would have been really hard for me to do that because I kind of worked, you know, odd hours. But
right, yeah.
So I was dismissed. But I still remember being in there and seeing the defendant, and they tell you why you're there and what the charges are. And I was like, yeah, he looks fucking guilty.
Anybody else noticing those shifty fucking eyes?
he legitimately had crazy eyes. I was like, yeah, he fucking totally did it.
Holy crap. Yeah, it's really weird.
It's an interesting process, though.
It is.
Just to make it that far, I was...
Yes.
The only time I made it that far, like...
Yeah.
You know, you call in, you get dismissed, or you go down there, you get dismissed. But
mm-hmm.
Yeah, that's the first time I've actually even
like got into that. The courtroom. Yeah. Mm-hmm. So the process for choosing a jury is actually really fucking boring, unless you're adamant mm-hmm. to try to get out of it. It's really fucking boring. So the judge hears every individual complaint as to why people can't commit to 6 weeks or more. Every fucking one. And it was a jury pool. This was a jury pool of over 125 people, all brought into the courtroom in groups because the courtroom, it wasn't holding 125 people. So it was like, here's your, right. you're this group, they're that small. Group. Yeah. So once the majority is weeded out, the rest of us got a jury questionnaire. And it wasn't a one or two page one. This that we had to fill out was over 20 pages long. It asked everything from how this will impact your life being on a trial, like on a trial this long, to if you have relatives on the police force, to your stance on the death penalty. And I was like, what? The death penalty? So I thought, well, this could still be really cool. So a few days later, also, by the way, this process is called the voir dire, where they're interviewing potential jurors. Mm-hmm. So a few days later, after the judge, the prosecution, and the defense read everyone's questionnaires, the ones chosen for more interviewing were called to come back, and I was one of them. So at that point, we were all interviewed privately in the courtroom, like you said, by the judge, the prosecution, and the defense. And that's a really nerve-wracking position to be in, because with our trial, we went in one at a time. There were no more little groups. There were no more anything. And we sat mm-hmm. on a chair in front of the judge, the prosecuting attorneys, the defense attorneys, and the defendant. So it was nerve-wracking to be in there being asked questions about my answers by these people and just kind of looking at this guy like, what'd you do? Holy shit. Oh my God, I'm freaking out. Death penalty? This cannot be great. So I've done panel interviews before for a job. Mm-hmm. That I'd applied to, but this is a vastly different situation.
Right.
And the defendant, Robert Hernandez, was sitting right there looking at me with the rest of them, which was very unsettling. Right. And again, I thought, what in the fucking world has this guy done? So they asked about my cousin. On my questionnaire, I had to put that my cousin was a former police officer, and they asked me about him, and they wanted to know if that would impact my decision-making in the trial. The fact was that he was a cop up in Payson when I was like 10 to 12 years old. I didn't live in that town. We visited a few times a year, and I was so young at the time that it wasn't any sort of factor of my life at all. And that's essentially right. verbatim what I said to them. I wasn't trying to be professional. I wasn't trying to be, you know, I probably said, in that moment in answering those questions than I have ever said on this podcast. It's just really a nerve-wracking experience. So then they asked if I would choose the death penalty. And I answered honestly and said that I can't say that I would or I wouldn't. I would need to hear the facts of the case and then see if there were any aggravating factors. 3 days later, I was called back to court. This time, the group was much smaller, and it was about 30 to 40 out of 125 people.
Mm-hmm.
So the judge called out the juror numbers of the people to be chosen to be on the jury, and mine was one of them. There were 16 of us in total, 12 to be the final jury and 4 alternates. None of us knew which of us would be what. It wasn't until after both sides rested that we were again chosen at random. And I ended up being one of the 4 alternates. So as an alternate, you don't go in and deliberate, but you do have to be there for the entire trial and every phase of the trial so that you know what's going on, know all of the testimony in the event a juror leaves and you're called in to replace them.
Mm-hmm.
So at the start of the trial, the judge told everyone that this isn't like it is on TV. It's not quick. This isn't going to be buttoned up in an hour. And she wasn't kidding. A real-life murder trial is so many things. So many things. And among one of those things is it's fucking tedious. it's tedious. There is no, okay, I'm the judge and go ahead and start. There's none of that. It is nothing like it is on Law and Order or whatever. At the beginning and end of each phase, witness testimony, cross-examination, if found guilty, then the aggravation phase and the mitigating factors phase. At the beginning and end of each of those, the judge reads the jury instructions to the entire courtroom. And they were like 7 to 10 pages each. So essentially, they were read and then altered based on the phase and read again at least 6 times. And she read them slowly. She read them clearly to make sure that everybody on that jury understood what was expected of them.
Right.
It was rough. I was like, Jesus. Some parts of it were boring. The guy who testified about DNA almost put the entire courtroom to sleep. And where I was sitting in the jury box was right, like, by him. And he was talking so low. It was like listening to Ferris Bueller's teacher talk about DNA. Right. I was like, I want to be a nurse. And I love everything about the human body. And this medicine and DNA is fascinating. But this guy, it was, I was like, don't yawn, Carrie. God, don't yawn. This is horrible. Oh, my God. Don't, like, just all, like, pinching my lips together and trying to dig my nails in my hand. And, you know, it was awful. So some of it was boring, but most all of it was horrible. The crime scene photos, the witness testimony, and that the dude himself was just feet away from us. Because the way they did it was they separated him, and it was him and 2 friends. And they split their trials. So it wasn't like the 3 of them were on trial together. The other 2 had their own jury and everything. So the witness testimony, the survivor Maria. Shit. Okay. I'm really going to try to get through this without crying, but I doubt I will, which is why I didn't really want to talk about it. She was so brave, and in my mind, she sealed his fate with her testimony. She had to have a Spanish-speaking translator because she lived in Mexico. She told of the day and of what happened. She said she remembered being shot and that the force of it threw her to the ground. She said she then had a seizure and was shaking on the floor. She remembered hearing Bobby pointed out to his friends and laughing at her.
Oh, my God.
And all you could hear in the courtroom were these quiet sniffs from various people watching it, the trial, and then a lot of us in the jury box. And once the witness testimony was over, the 12 jurors went to deliberate, and a few days later, we were all called back that they had reached a verdict of guilty, and we needed to begin the sentencing phase. So, in that phase, family and friends give victim impact statements.
Mm-hmm.
And it's the most awful thing to hear ever. I'm sorry.
Yeah. No, it's okay.
So the parents of Jenny stood at the podium in front of the jury box and told us of how they would take Jenny's young children. They had taken them in. And her mother said that her son, Jenny's son, when they go to the cemetery, lays down on his mother's grave and cries and says he just wants to be with his mom.
That's awful.
It was horrible. And I can't even... It's absolutely heartbreaking to listen to that. It was heartbreaking to listen to all of them. So, then there was the aggravating...
Did that guy look like he had any remorse at all
Mm-mm.
during the trial?
Mm-mm. No. Nope. No. He generally was doodling on a notepad. Occasionally, he'd look up or whatever. But he did... look up once when Maria was testifying because she had to point him out. They asked her to mm-hmm. point out.
Right.
Point him out. And
mm-hmm.
when she did, it was the only time he looked at her and he looked her dead in the eye and she could barely look at him. She pointed him out and he looked at her and she looked away. It was awful. And he had nothing, no look on his face, no threatening look, no I'm sorry, just a blank,
mm-hmm.
kind of like in that picture that I just sent you. It was
right, like,
yeah, nothing going on. So then there was the aggravating factors phase, which is used to determine if the death penalty is warranted. And the jury found four aggravating factors: the existence of prior convictions, the homicides were especially cruel, the offenses were committed while on authorized release from State Department of Corrections.
Oh, shit.
And multiple homicides were involved. Mm-hmm. So mitigation phase was to determine why he did what he did. We heard testimony of his childhood. We heard from his mother, siblings, etc. We heard about a head injury that he had suffered as a child. We heard from a court-appointed psychiatrist about his mental state. And after finding no mitigation sufficiently substantial to call for leniency, the jury returned a verdict of death for each of the three murders. So, as of today, it looks like he's run out of his appeals. This trial was in 2012.
Yeah, it takes a long time.
Yeah, so it looks like he's run out of his appeals. He was appealing on the grounds that his lawyers were terrible, essentially. Mm-hmm. He, I was reading about it, and I read the actual, like, appellate court's decision, and it was all very tedious. But basically, he was saying that they hardly met with him, they didn't give him all the information, he wanted to testify, and they said no, that he couldn't. But in, like, the 2 years that they were preparing, two, 3 years they were preparing for the trial, he only met with his lawyers twice, all of this stuff. And they had had, they had had hearings before the big, big hearing.
Right, of course.
They had had hearings where he had complained, and the judge was like, well, did you do this? Yes. And then, do you agree that they did this? Yes. Okay. So they just never found, like, he was just trying to delay it, as they do.
Right. Of course. Yeah.
Yeah. So they ended up taking it to the Arizona Supreme Court, and they were like, nope, denied. And then they presented it to the U.S. Supreme Court, and the U.S. Supreme Court declined to review the case. So he's done.
Yeah.
And honestly, the entire time, I had been grateful that I wasn't chosen as a member of the 12 jurors, because it is very definitely one thing to hear about a murder trial on, you know, the news, on CNN, on, and be like, that's awful, I would fry him, I would absolutely vote for the death penalty, or to say he deserves the death penalty. And most of us have done that. You know what I mean? Mm-hmm. Like, Richard Ramirez, deserved the death penalty. It just, but it's a far different thing to be the one charged with actually deciding to put somebody to death. To make the decision that this person must die. And that's, it was a very real possibility that I'd have to be a part of that decision. And the idea of that weighed so heavily on me the entire time. In the end, there were two of the four alternates did get called to replace a main juror, but I wasn't one of them. And I was really relieved, because it is. And I did struggle, had a lot of sleepless nights with what if he deserves death for what he did. And after seeing all of the evidence and hearing all the witness testimony and the victim impact statements, that was a fair punishment.
Mm-hmm.
But in my personal beliefs, religious beliefs, how would I reconcile that and explain that to God on my judgment day? That weighed on me so heavily. So I was really relieved that I never had to replace a main juror, because I don't honestly know how I would have lived with that. So I am friends with two of my fellow jurors still to this day. And one of them was another alternate, and one of them was on the main jury. And I asked both of them if they would be willing to share their thoughts and experience for this episode. The one who was an alternate said that they'd be happy to, but they didn't really have much to say since they were an alternate like me.
Right.
The one who was a main juror said no, that they have spent the last 10 years trying to forget all about it. And I probably would
imagine
too. Like, I don't even ever really talk about it unless we get, where I'm in a conversation where people are like talking about, oh God, jury duty. And have you ever done jury, you know, kind of a thing. So the main juror who was a main juror the whole entire time, like she wasn't an alternate that had to be called in or anything. I don't really blame them for not wanting to talk about this or be on the podcast or contribute anything to this episode. I don't blame them at all because it was one of the worst things to be a part of in my entire life. And
that's heavy.
I've never been called back for jury duty since. And that's really quite okay with me because I think once you're on that kind of level of a trial, they don't like, I think there's something, one woman that
make
we
a mark there for mm-hmm. you.
Yeah. There was one woman who said, she was really surprised that she had been chosen and called in for jury duty because she had been on a grand jury for this massive drug running case in Arizona. Mm-hmm. And she had said something like that casually while the bailiff was in the jury room, and the bailiff was like, well, you're not likely to be called back for another case like that. Like, they're mm-hmm. you know, it would be too difficult to, if every, you know, 2 to 4 years you're called in and, oh God, I got another death penalty murder trial again. Like, there's
right,
there's something that I'm sure that they probably attach to your social security number that, so that you're not like randomly called for this kind of a case. There's just gotta be, because I was getting jury, you get jury summons every few years, don't you? Like,
yeah. And you gotta think too, like, there aren't that many of those anyway. Most of the time you're on like drunk driving or, you know what I mean? Like
drug offense kind of misdemeanor. Like,
exactly. So there's so many more of those cases anyway.
Yeah.
For you to be called in for, as opposed to like these, I mean, how many capital murder cases are there in Arizona at one point in time or another?
They're I mean, God. Many. Yeah. Thank God. Yeah.
Even though it is a big city, there's not like.
Right. Yeah. Yeah. So I have not been called back.
Do you know what happened to the other two? Like the accomplices?
Guilty.
Or?
Guilty, but they didn't get life. It was him that arranged it all, planned it all. And, they got lengthy sentences, especially the guy that shot Omar, I believe. But the other guy was really just kind of, I want to say he was like a lookout or something, but, this guy, Robert Hernandez, is the only one that got death because it was premeditated. It was everything. And it was all him. And they booked two other two testified, hey, he called us and said, hey, I need your help with something. Mm-hmm. And they were dumb enough to be like, okay, let's do it. That sounds really great. I haven't been called back for jury duty since, and that's really okay with me. And what an idiot. I was really, really looking forward to jury duty. I was so excited. I was like, yay, I didn't get dismissed. I get to go. Oh, this is cool. And then I thought, and then as the trial went on, I was like, this is absolutely horrible. I hate all of this. It isn't anything like I thought it would be. It's difficult. And quite honestly, I don't know how. I would sit there and I would look at like the court reporter and even the judge and the bailiffs and just think, how do these people do this and listen to this all the time? All the time. Because it was Judge Sherry Stevens. She's one of those judges that, you know, is on the ballots when we vote.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. And I always vote for her because she was really cool. I liked her, but I just don't know how they could sit there and listen to these horrible, horrible stories all the time as their job. It's just, good God, I can't imagine it. Six weeks was more than enough for me. More than enough.
Yeah, I can't imagine that being... One, I mean, any kind of entertainment, you know, as we like think of trials, I think now a lot because of OJ and all the TV shows like Law and Order and stuff you said. They almost like we digest them like they're entertainment, but they're really fucking not. And there's nothing really entertaining about it, especially, you know, cases like this.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. It's just, I always thought if I ever had a true crime podcast that I would tell this story. And so then when you and I were like, hey, we should bring the Patreons to True Crimes, and I was like, talk to my mom about it, and I'm like, do you think I should tell Laura about Robert Hernandez? And she's like, do you think you can? And I was like, maybe, I don't, we'll see. So I did have a backup. Yeah, I did have a backup in case, as I was writing it, I just couldn't. But I'm glad that I did, because I think it's an important story to tell. Like, as with all victims, like, they should be the ones that are remembered instead of their murderers. And I think about that little boy all the time. All the time.
And it's good. It's such an interesting perspective because so few people have that knowledge, right?
Mm-hmm, yeah.
Zane, go. I'm almost done. I don't know. We're wrapping up. Go. All right.
Yeah. Sorry. No, that's okay. So, yeah.
What else do you want? Take your basketball. I got you the
right?
Your favorite non-food, fast food, gross stuff.
Right.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Like, listen.
What more can I do for you?
Make you any happier.
Yeah. Yeah. So I wanted to talk a little bit. about the actual process of something like that. I was floored when they handed me that pamphlet that said Arizona lengthy trial process, and I thought, what's a lengthy trial? 6 weeks. Holy shit, this is great. And I mean, that part of it was really cool because I got paid jury duty pay from the state.
Yeah.
And then GM Financial actually paid me my normal salary. Like, they paid me my 8 hours every single day. And we were only, the trial, like, I think it would start at 10:30. We'd have to be there at 10:30 in the morning. And we were always done by 4. So it wasn't like a full day. But I got paid a double. So I was like, this is really great. Plus, it was right off the light rail. And I didn't have a car at the time. So the light rail picked me up right in front of my apartment, dropped me off right at Jefferson and, what is it, First Avenue.
Yeah,
it was the best. It was the best. I was like, this is great. We'd go out and have lunch. And I remember one time we went to this restaurant. I think it was Tom's Cafe or something downtown. And they sat us. And there were like 6 of us. And the judge was there with a couple of like her colleagues. And she was like, we didn't realize that she was there until this woman called over the server. And she was like, you need to move me because this is my jury and I can't sit by them. And we were like, what? And we were like, oh shit, it's the judge. Oh my God. So yeah, it was pretty crazy. Just little stuff like that you don't ever think about when you think about being a juror and whatever. We also had to take a different elevator one time from the prosecuting attorney, him and his like second chair, whatever.
They can't be alone with you guys.
They can't be alone with us at all. And that guy, the defense attorney for him, we had found out was his next case was the baseline rapist. He was the defense attorney for the baseline rapist. Lost that one too. I was like, you seriously, he lost that one too. I was like, you might want to change fields of law because you don't seem to be very good at defense, criminal defense anyway.
Yeah. Well, he is, but those motherfuckers were so guilty. There's
not. They're hard. Yeah. The best thing that he could hope to do was try to get the baseline rapist to not get the death penalty, and I don't think he won that one either.
Yeah. Well, I think sometimes they offer the pleas and sometimes,
to
go for life instead of the death penalty, but not all the time.
Not all the time. Yeah. So, So that, ladies and gentlemen, is the story of Robert Hernandez and the story of Carrie Hopper, death penalty juror. Yeah. So I'm wondering how long it's going to take before I get called for jury duty here because I'm sure that's probably now I'm not in the system and they're not going to be like, oh, she's flagged. If it's another one, I'm going to be like, honestly, I was traumatized. I'm still traumatized from the last one. And you just can't pick me. And everybody thought that when I had gotten called, because I couldn't talk about it. I couldn't tell anybody like what the case was, but everyone was like, oh, jury duty. And is it a bad one? I'm like, yeah, it's a really bad one. And like, everybody was telling me, like, oh, just, you know, say you're a racist or say this or say that. And, like, just say these little words that'll get you immediately disqualified. And I was like, I don't want to do that. Like, I don't mind jury duty. I have this job I fucking hate. Like, I'm happy to spend a day at court. But I also, you know, I was really one of those people that was super excited to be on a jury. Yeah. So that changed real quick with this one. I'll do a drug case, though.
100%.
I don't mind a little misdemeanor drug offense. I think that's what Jennifer
got. Yeah, I don't think that I would ever get picked because of my close association with police.
Yeah, so yeah.
They probably won't because I just have too close of people.
Well, yeah, and I thought that was really an interesting question that they asked me because I was like... Why would that? I was like, why would that affect me? Like, that's stupid. But I get if it were my husband, that, you know what I mean? Like, people's, you know, they could be swayed, like police, you know, I get it. But it was a really interesting experience. And careful what you wish for, because it may come true. You might fucking get it. And it might be the worst thing you have ever had to live through in your entire life. Because I still do think of that those people, and I think of that little boy, and it's just awful. It's probably something that I never will forget. And my friend who was actually on the jury that decided the death penalty, my heart goes out to her, because it's something that she's been working really hard to try and forget. And so she's probably struggling with it herself.
Well, thank you for being so brave and talking about it, even though I know it's difficult.
Yeah. Yeah. I had warned you guys.
Perspective.
I had warned Laura. I was like, listen, my story, I'm probably going to cry, and I'll try really hard not to, but probably going to cry. And,
cry at, like, every true crime almost at some point.
I think so. Did I cry during Richard Ramirez? I don't think I cried with him. He was pretty rough.
Yeah,
he was pretty rough. I don't know what I'm going to do for my next one. You're up next in May. I have June, and I'm not sure which one I'm going to do, but I'll probably do... I don't know. There's just too many to pick from, frankly. There's just too many. There's just too many.
I think... I know what I'm doing next month.
You do? Oh, good. Okay.
Mm-hmm. Yeah,
did you already reserve it with Jennifer?
Yes. Okay. Actually, I think I'm going to do one regular and then a bonus.
Ooh, cool.
Mm-hmm.
Neat. That'll be cool.
Yeah.
Anyway.
A bonus one for the month. Just because they're not the same, but they're kind of in the same vein, so.
Oh, okay.
You know.
That's cool. That's cool.
Good times. I love murders that tie together.
You know what? I love when they really make it easy for me to do a double whammy episode. That'll be cool. I really do love true crime, but this, you know, when you're sort of like adjacent associated with it, it's not great. So patrons, I do want to let you guys know that we are going to be releasing this episode as a regular episode, or not really as a regular episode, but as a special episode to bring in more Patreon. So this is the episode that we are going to be releasing to the general public as well. But we're going to save all the really, really good ones, the really, really bad ones for you guys. So we're going to be releasing this to the general public next week, give you guys a chance to listen to it, and then we'll probably sometime next week. We'll release it to everybody else and just kind of promote it and all of that fun stuff. So if you listen to this and you like it, please give us a shout out on social media that you're a Patreon and you really love this episode, and to come on over to Patreon. We really, really appreciate it. And
or any of the true crime episodes too, you know, feel free to talk them up.
Talk them up. Yeah, absolutely. I'm telling you what. I was trying to tell my mother about the monster with 21 faces. I was trying to tell her about it. I was butchering the fuck out of it. I'm like, you know what? Just listen to the episode. You're a Patreon. Thanks, mommy. I was butchering it. I was like, wait a minute. Hang on.
It's such a convoluted story to tell, but I thought it was so... It's just so fucking off the wall and weird.
Super weird. And then the other day when I was at the...
out of my mind.
The other day when I was at the grocery store, I came across Pockies from Glico, and I was like, took a picture of them. I'm like, look. So they stick with you. They really do. They're great. Anyway, all right, go take care of your child. See what he wants.
No.
Try to remove your cat from your tools, your toolbox, and your drill bit cases and stuff. I'm telling you what, you got a weird household you run, lady.
It really is. Yeah. Like, you've been involved in everything. Like, I hung up some shelves and I was working on hanging up this TV, and the cat just goes and lays on the drill bit. I'm like, you could lay anywhere.
You're literally anywhere.
There's a couch. There's so many comfy places. But no, just go ahead and lay on the screwdriver and the drill bit. Whatever suits you.
Well, when I was there and I had the investigation equipment kit, like, suitcase open, he was laying on top of that. I was like, is that comfy? What are you doing?
I know. He's like, I'm just marking my territory.
I had, right?
If you're interested in this, I'm going to lay right on top of it so that you also have to pay attention.
The charger box, I have it, like, the prongs, like, I have the... where the prongs stick up in the foam, and he was laying right on it. I'm like, that cannot feel good to you.
For real.
But for he's real. Pretty but dumb.
Yes, exactly.
Anyway, all right, guys, we love you, and we are so grateful for you. Thank you so much for everything that you do, and we hope you enjoy this true crime, and I hope it doesn't bum out your Easter weekend. And if it does, I apologize in advance.
Eat some chocolate.
Eat some chocolate bunnies. All right. Bye, guys. We love you.
Bye. Thank you.